decorative wood-shingled cornice between two bookshelves and pressed herself into the recess of the wall. A single set of footsteps exited the office, and the door closed firmly. Luce held her breath and waited for the figure to descend the stairs. At first, she could see only his feet, brown European leather boots. Then a pair of dark wash jeans came into view as he curved around the banister toward the second story of the lodge. A blue and white striped button-down shirt, and finally, the distinctly recognizable mane of black and gold dreadlocks. Roland Sparks had turned up at Shoreline. Luce jumped out from her hidden perch. She might still be on nervous best behavior in front of Francesca and Stephen, who were dauntingly gorgeous and powerful and mature, and her teachers. But Roland didn't intimidate her. Not much, anyway. Not anymore. Besides, he was the closest to Daniel she'd been in days. She slunk down the interior steps as silently as she could, then burst through the lodge door to the deck. Roland was moseying toward the ocean, like he didn't have a care in the world. "Roland!" she shouted, thundering down the last flight of stairs to the ground and breaking into a jog. He stood where the path ended and the bluff dropped down to steep and craggy rocks. He was standing so still, looking out at the water. Luce was surprised to feel butterflies in her stomach when, very slowly, he began to turn around.
"Wow, wow," he smiled. "Lucinda Price discovers peroxide."
"Oh," she clutched at her hair. How stupid she must look to him.
"No, no," he said, stepping toward her, fluffing her hair with his fingers. "It suits you. A hard edge for hard times."
"What are you doing here?"
"Enrolling." He shrugged. "I just picked up my class schedule, met the teachers. Seems like a pretty sweet place."
A woven knapsack was slung over one of his shoulders, with something long and narrow and silver sticking out of it. Following her eyes, Roland switched the bag to his other shoulder and tightened the top flap with a knot. "Roland," her voice quaked, "you left Sword and Cross? Why? What are you doing here?"
"Just needed a change of pace," he offered cryptically.
Luce was going to ask about the others, Arian and Gabby, even Molly, whether anyone had noticed or cared that she'd left. But when she opened her mouth, what came out was very different from what she had expected. "What were you talking about in there with Francesca and Stephen?" Roland's face changed suddenly, hardened into something older, less carefree.
"That depends. How much did you hear?"
"Daniel, I heard you say that he..." "You don't have to lie to me, Roland. How much longer until he comes back? Because I don't think I can..."
"Come take a walk with me, Luce."
As awkward as it would have felt for Roland Sparks to put his arm around her shoulders back at Sword and Cross, that was how comforting it was when he did it that day at Shoreline. They were never really friends, but he was a reminder of her past, a bond she couldn't help turning to now. They walked along the bluff's edge, around the breakfast terrace and along the west side of the dorms, past a rose garden Luce had never seen before. It was dusk, and the water to their right was alive with colors, reflecting the rose and orange and violet clouds gliding in front of the sun. Roland led her to a bench facing the water, far away from all the campus buildings. Looking down, she could see a rugged set of stairs carved into the rock, starting just below where they were sitting and leading all the way down to the beach. "What do you know that you aren't saying?" Luce asked when the silence began to get to her.
"That water is 51 degrees, Roland said.
"Not what I meant," she said, looking him right in the eyes. "Did he send you here to watch over me?" Roland scratched his head.
"Look, Daniel's off doing his thing."
He made a flitting motion at the sky.
"In the meantime,"
and she thought he cocked his head toward the forest behind the dorm,
"you got your own thing to take care of."
"What? No, I don't have a thing. I'm just here because..."
"Bullshit," he laughed. "We all have our secrets, Luce. Mine brought me to Shoreline. Yours has been leading you out to those woods."
She started to protest, but Roland waved her off, that ever-cryptic look in his eyes.
"I'm not going to get you in trouble. In fact, I'm rooting for you."
His eyes moved past her, out to sea.
"Now, back to that water. It's frigid. Have you been in it? I know you like to swim."
It struck Luce that she'd been at Shoreline for 3 days, with the ocean always visible, the waves always audible,
the salt air always coating everything, but she still hadn't set foot on the beach. And it wasn't like at Sword and Cross, where a laundry list of things were off limits. She didn't know why it hadn't even occurred to her. She shook her head.
About all you can do with a beach that cold is build a bonfire.
Roland glanced at her.
You made any friends here yet?
Luce shrugged. A few.
Bring them by tonight, after dark.
He pointed to a narrow peninsula of sand at the foot of the rocky stairs.
Right down there.
She peered at Roland sideways. What exactly do you have in mind? Roland grinned devilishly.
Don't worry, we'll keep it innocent. Well, you know how it is. I'm new in town. I'd like to make my presence known.
Dude, stomp down on my heel one more time, and I'm seriously going to have to break your ankle.
Maybe if you weren't hogging the entire beam of the flashlight up there, Shell, the rest of us could see where we were going.
Luce tried to stifle her laugh as she followed a bickering Miles and Shelby across campus in the dark. It was almost 11, and Shoreline was pitch black and silent, except for the hoot of an owl. An orange gibbous moon was low in the sky, cloaked by a veil of fog. Between the three of them, they'd only been able to come up with one flashlight, Shelby's, so only one of them, Shelby, had a clear view of the path down to the water. For the other two, the grounds, which had seemed so lush and well-tended in the daylight, were now booby-trapped with fallen bristle cones, thick-rooted ferns, and the backs of Shelby's feet. When Roland had asked her to bring some friends tonight, Luce had gotten a sinking feeling in her stomach. There were no hall monitors at Shoreline, no terrifying security cameras recording the students' every move, so it wasn't the threat of getting caught that made her nervous. In fact, sneaking out of the dorm had been relatively easy. It was drawing a crowd that was a bigger challenge. Dawn and Jasmine seemed like the most likely candidates for a party on the beach, but when Luce went by their fifth-floor room, the hallway was dark, and no one answered her knock. Back in her own room, Shelby had been tangled up in some sort of tantric yoga pose that hurt Luce just to look at. Luce hadn't wanted to break her roommate's fierce concentration by inviting her to some unknown party, but then a loud knock at their door had made Shelby fall crossly from her pose anyway. Miles, asking Luce if she wanted to get some ice cream. Luce looked back and forth between Miles and Shelby and smiled. I've got a better idea. 10 minutes later, bundled up in hooded sweatshirts, a backward Dodgers cap, Miles, and wool socks with individual toe shapes sewn in so she could still wear her flip-flops, Shelby, and with a nervous feeling in the gut about mingling Roland with a Shoreline crew, Luce, the three of them tramped toward the bluff's edge.
So, who is this guy again? Miles asked, pointing out a dip in the rocky path just before Luce would have gone flying.
He's just a guy from my last school. Luce searched for a better description as the three of them started down the rocky stairs. Roland wasn't exactly her friend, and even though kids at Shoreline seemed pretty open-minded, she wasn't sure she should tell them which side of the fallen angel divide Roland fell on. He was friends with Daniel, she said finally. It'll probably be a pretty small party. I don't think he knows anyone here but me. They could smell it before they could see it, the telltale hickory smoke of a good-sized bonfire. Then, when they were almost at the foot of the steep stairs, they wound around a bend in the rocks and froze as the sparks from a wild orange blaze finally came into view. There must have been 100 people gathered on the beach. The wind was wild, like an untamed animal, but it was no match for the rowdiness of the partygoers. At one end of the gathering, closest to where Luce stood, a crowd of hippie guys with long, thick beards and ratty woven shirts had formed a makeshift drum circle. Their steady beat provided a nearby group of kids with a constantly changing groove to dance to. At the other end of the party was the bonfire itself, and when Luce stood on her toes, she recognized a lot of Shoreline kids crowded around the fire, hoping to beat out the cold. Everyone was holding a stick in the flames, jockeying for the best spot to roast their hot dogs and marshmallows, their cast-iron kettles full of beans. It was impossible to guess how they'd all found out about it, but it was clear that everyone was having a good time. And in the middle of it all, Roland. He'd changed out of his pressed button-down shirt and expensive leather boots, and was dressed, like everyone else there, in a hooded sweatshirt and shredded jeans. He was standing on a boulder, making riotous, exaggerated gestures, telling a story Luce couldn't quite hear. Dawn and Jasmine were among the captivated listeners, Their firelit faces looked pretty and alive.
"This is your idea of a small party?" Miles asked.
Luce was watching Roland, wondering what story he was telling. Something about the way he was taking charge made Luce think back to Cam's room, to the first and only real party she'd ever gone to at Sword and Cross, and it made her miss Arian. And, of course, Pen, who'd been nervous when she first arrived at the party, but ended up having a better time than anyone. And Daniel, who would barely speak to Luce back then. Things were so different now.
"Well, I don't know about you guys," Shelby said, kicking off her flip-flops and padding onto the sand in her socks. "But I'm going to get myself a drink, then a hot dog, then maybe a lesson from one of those... But I'm going to get myself a drink, then a hot dog, then maybe a lesson from one of those drum circle guys."
"Me too," Miles said. "Except for the drum circle part, in case that wasn't obvious."
"Luce!"
Roland waved from his position on the boulder.
"You made it."
Miles and Shelby were already ahead of her, heading toward the hot dog station, so Luce trekked over a dune of cool, damp sand toward Roland and the others.
"You weren't kidding when you said you wanted to make your presence known. This is really something, Roland."
Roland nodded graciously.
"Something, huh? Something good or something bad?"
It seemed like a loaded question, and what Luce wanted to say was that she couldn't tell anymore. She thought about the heated conversation she'd overheard in the teacher's office. How sharp Francesca's voice had sounded. The line between what was good and what was bad felt incredibly blurry. Roland and Stephen were fallen angels who'd gone over. Demons, right? Did she even know what that meant? But then there was Cam, and... What did Roland mean by that question? She squinted at him. Maybe he was really only asking whether Luce was having fun. A myriad of colorful partygoers swirled around her, but Luce could feel the endless black waves nearby. The air near the water was whipping and cold, but the bonfire was hot on her skin. So many things seemed to be at odds right now, all shoving up against her at once. "Who are all these people, Roland?"
"Let's see." Roland pointed at the hippie kids in the drum circle. "Townies."
To their right, he gestured at a big group of guys trying to impress a much smaller group of girls with a few very bad thrusting dance moves.
"Those guys are Marines stationed in Fort Bragg. From the way they're partying, I hope they're on leave for the weekend."
When Jasmine and Don sidled up next to him, Roland put one arm around each of their shoulders.
"These two, I believe you know."
"You didn't tell us you were such big friends with the Celestial Social Director, Luce," Jasmine said.
"Seriously,"
Dawn leaned in to whisper loudly to Luce.
"Only my diary knows how many times I've wished to go to a Roland Sparks party, and my diary will never tell."
"Oh, but I might," Roland joked.
"Is there no relish at this party?"
Shelby popped up behind Luce with Miles at her side. She was holding two hot dogs in one hand and stuck out her free one to Roland.
"Shelby Starris, who are you?"
"Shelby Starris," Roland repeated. "I'm Roland Sparks. You ever live in East L.A.? Have we met before?"
"No."
"She has a photographic memory," Miles supplied, slipping Luce a veggie hot dog, which was not her favorite, but a nice gesture nonetheless.
"I'm Miles. Cool party, by the way."
"Very cool," Don agreed, swaying with Roland to the drumbeat.
"What about Stephen and Francesca?" Luce had to practically shout to Shelby. "Won't they hear us down here?" It was one thing to sneak out under the radar. It was another to plant a sonic boom directly on that radar. Jasmine glanced back toward the campus.
"They'll hear us, sure, but our leash is pretty long at Shoreline, at least for the Nephilim kids. As long as we stay on campus under their umbrella of surveillance, we can pretty much do as we please."
"Does that include a limbo contest?"
Roland grinned impishly, producing a long, thick branch from behind him.
"Miles, you going to hold the other end for me?"
Seconds later, the branch was raised, the drumbeat changed, and it seemed like the whole party had dropped what they were doing to form one long, animated limbo line.
"Luce," Miles called to her. "You're not just going to stand there, are you?"
She studied the crowd, feeling stiff and rooted to her spot in the sand. But Dawn and Jasmine were making an opening for her to squeeze into line between the two of them.
Already in competition mode... Probably born in competition mode, Shelby was stretching out her back.
Even the buttoned-up Marine guys were going to play.
"Fine."
Luce laughed and got in line. Once the game began, the line moved quickly. For 3 rounds, Luce shimmied easily under the branch. The 4th time, she made it under with only a little trouble, having to tilt her chin back far enough to see the stars, and got a round of cheers for doing so. Soon she was cheering on the other kids, too, only a little surprised to find herself jumping up and down when Shelby made it through. There was something amazing about arching out of the limbo stance after a successful turn. The whole party seemed to feed off it. Each time it gave Luce a surprising rush of adrenaline. Having fun wasn't usually such a simple thing. For so long, laughter had usually been closely followed by guilt, some nagging feeling that she wasn't supposed to be enjoying herself, for one reason or another. But somehow, tonight, she felt lighter. Without even realizing it, she'd been able to shrug off the darkness. By the time Luce looped around for her 5th turn, the line was significantly shorter. Half the kids at the party had already gotten out, and everyone was crowded around either Miles or Roland, watching the last kid standing. At the back of the line, Luce was giddy and a little lightheaded, so the hard grip she felt on her arm almost made her lose her balance. She started to scream, then felt fingers clamp over her mouth.
Shh!
Daniel was tugging her out of line and away from the party. His strong, warm hand sliding down her neck, his lips brushing the side of her cheek. For just a moment, the touch of his skin on hers, coupled with the bright violet glow of his eyes, and her days-old rising need to grab hold of him and never let go, it all made Luce divinely dizzy. "What are you doing here?" she whispered. She meant to say, "Thank God you're here," or, "It's been so hard to be apart," or what she really meant, "I love you." But there were also, "You abandoned me," and, "I thought it wasn't safe," and, "What's this about a truce?" all knocking around in her brain.
"I had to see you," he said.
As he led her behind a large volcanic rock on the beach, there was a conspiratorial smile on his face. The kind of smile that was contagious, finding its way onto Luce's lips, too. The kind of smile that acknowledged not just that they were breaking Daniel's rule, but that they were enjoying doing it.
"When I got close enough to see this party, I noticed everyone dancing," he said. "And I got a little jealous."
"Jealous?" Luce asked. They were alone now. She threw her arms around his broad shoulders and looked deep into his violet eyes. "Why would you be jealous?"
"Because," he said, rubbing his hands across her back. "Your dance card is full. For all eternity."
Daniel held her right hand in his, wrapped her left around his shoulder, and started a slow two-step in the sand. They could still hear the music from the party, but from this side of the rock, it felt like a private concert. Luce closed her eyes and melted against his chest, finding the place where her head fit into his shoulder like a puzzle piece.
"No, this isn't quite right," Daniel said after a moment. He pointed down at her feet. She noticed he was barefoot. "Take off your shoes," he said, "and I'll show you how angels dance."
Luce slipped off her black flats and tossed them aside on the beach. The sand between her toes was soft and cool. When Daniel pulled her close, her toes overlapped with his, and she almost lost her balance, but his arms held her steady. When she looked down, her feet were on top of his, and when she looked up, the sight she yearned for night and day, Daniel unfurling his silver-white wings. They filled her plane of vision, stretching 20 feet into the sky. Broad and beautiful, glowing in the night, they must have been the most glorious wings in all of heaven. Underneath her own feet, Luce felt Daniel's lift just barely off the ground. His wings beat lightly, almost like a heartbeat, holding both of them inches above the beach.
"Ready?" he asked.
Ready for what? She didn't know. It didn't matter. Now they were moving backward in the air, as smoothly as figure skaters moved on ice. Daniel glided out over the water, holding her in his arms. Luce gasped as the first frothy wave skimmed their toes. Daniel laughed and lifted them a little higher in the sky. He dipped her backward. He spun them both around in circles. They were dancing. On the ocean. The moon was like a spotlight, shining down on only them. Luce was laughing from sheer joy, laughing so much that Daniel started laughing too. She'd never felt lighter.
"Thank you," she whispered.
His answer was a kiss. He kissed her softly at first, on her forehead, then on her nose, then finally found his way to her lips. She kissed him back deeply and hungrily and a bit desperately, throwing her whole body into it. This was how she came home to Daniel, how she touched that easy love they'd shared for so long. For a moment, the whole world went quiet. Then Luce came up gasping for air. She hadn't even noticed they were back on the beach. His hand cupped the back of her head, the ski cap she'd tugged down over her ears, the cap concealing her bleached blonde hair. He pulled it off, and a blast of ocean breeze hit her head.
"What did you do to your hair?"
His voice was soft, but somehow it sounded like an accusation. Maybe it was because the song had ended, and the dance and the kiss had too, and now they were just two people standing on a beach. Daniel's wings were arched back behind his shoulders, still visible but out of reach. "Who cares about my hair?" All she cared about was holding him. Wasn't that all he should care about, too? Luce reached to take back the ski cap. Her bare blonde head felt too exposed, like a glowing red flag warning Daniel that she might be falling apart. As soon as she started to turn away, Daniel put his arms around her.
"Hey,"
he said, pulling her close again.
"I'm sorry."
She exhaled, drew into him, and let his touch wash over her. She tipped her head up to meet his eyes. "Is it safe now?" she asked, wanting Daniel to be the one to bring up the truce. Could they finally be together? But the worn look in his eyes gave her the answer before he opened his mouth.
"I shouldn't be here, but I worry about you."
He held her at arm's length.
"And from the looks of things, I'm right to worry."
He fingered a lock of her hair.
"I don't understand why you did this, Luce. It isn't you."
She pushed him away. It had always bothered her when people said that. "Well, I'm the one who dyed it, Daniel, so technically it is me. Maybe not the me you want me to be."
"That's not fair. I don't want you to be anyone other than who you are."
"Which is who, Daniel? Because if you know the answer to that, feel free to clue me in." Her voice grew louder as frustration overtook the passion slipping through her fingers. "I'm on my own here, trying to figure out why, trying to figure out what I'm doing here with all these... when I'm not even..."
"When you're not what?"
How had they gone so quickly from dancing on air to this? "I don't know. I'm just trying to take it day by day. Make friends, you know? Yesterday I joined a club and we're planning a yacht trip somewhere. Things like that." What she really wanted to tell him about were the shadows, and especially what she'd done in the woods. But Daniel had narrowed his eyes like she'd already done something wrong.
"You're not going on a yacht trip anywhere."
"What?"
"You'll stay right here on this campus until I say so."
He exhaled, sensing her rising anger.
"I hate giving you these rules, Luce, but I'm doing so much to keep you safe. I won't let anything happen to you."
"Literally." Luce gritted her teeth. "Good or bad or otherwise. Seems like when you're not around, you don't want me doing anything at all."
"That's not true."
He shook a finger at her. She'd never seen him lose his temper so quickly. Then he looked up at the sky, and Luce followed his gaze. A shadow zipped over their heads, like an all-black firework, leaving a deadly, smoky tail. Daniel seemed to be able to read it instantly.
"I have to go," he said.
"How shocking." She turned away. "Turn up out of nowhere, pick a fight, then duck out. This must be real, true love." He grabbed her shoulders and shook them until she met his eyes.
"It is true love," he said,
with such desperation that Luce couldn't tell whether it chipped away at or added to the pain in her heart.
"You know it is."
His eyes burned violet, not with anger, but with intense desire. The kind of look that made you love a person so much you missed him even when he was standing right in front of you. Daniel ducked his head to kiss her cheek, but she was too close to tears. Embarrassed, she turned away. She heard his sigh, and then the beat of wings. No. When she whipped her head around, Daniel was soaring across the sky, halfway between the ocean and the moon. His wings were lit bright white under a moonbeam. A moment later, it was hard to tell him apart from any of the stars in the sky. 5. 14 days. During the night, a windless layer of fog moved in, like an army, settling over the town of Fort Bragg. It didn't lift with the sunrise, and its gloom seeped into everything and everyone. So all day Friday in school, Luce felt like she was being dragged along by a slow-moving tide. The teachers were out of focus, non-committal and slow with their lectures. The students sat in a heap of lethargy, struggling to stay awake through the long, damp drone of the day. By the time classes let out, the dreariness had penetrated Luce to her very core. She didn't know what she was doing at this school that wasn't really hers, in this temporary life that only highlighted her lack of a real, permanent one. All she wanted to do was crawl into her bottom bunk and sleep it all away. Not just the weather, or her long first week at Shoreline, but also the argument with Daniel, and the jumble of questions and anxieties that had shaken loose in her mind. Sleep, the night before, had been impossible. In the darkest hours of the morning, she'd stumbled alone back to her dorm room. She tossed and turned, without ever really dozing off. Daniel shutting her out no longer surprised her, but that didn't mean it had gotten any easier. And that insulting, chauvinistic order he'd given her to stay on the school grounds? What was this, the 19th century? It crossed her mind that maybe Daniel had spoken to her like that centuries ago, but, like Jane Eyre or Elizabeth Bennet, Luce was certain no former self of hers would ever have been cool with that, and she certainly wasn't now. She was still angry and annoyed after class, moving through the fog toward the dorm. Her eyes were bleary, and she was practically sleepwalking by the time her hand clasped her doorknob. Tumbling into the dim, empty room, she almost didn't see the envelope someone had slipped under the door. It was cream-colored, flimsy, and square, and when she flipped it over, she saw her name typed on the front in small, blocky letters. She tore into it, wanting an apology from him, knowing she owed him one, too. The letter inside was typewritten on cream-colored paper and folded into thirds. "Dear Luce, there's something I've been waiting too long to tell you. Meet me in town, near Noyo Point, around 6 o'clock tonight. The number 5 bus along Highway 1 stops a quarter of a mile south of Shoreline. Use this bus pass. I'll be waiting by the North Cliff. Can't wait to see you. Love, Daniel." Shaking the envelope, Luce felt a small slip of paper inside. She pulled out a thin blue-and-white bus ticket with the number 5 printed on its front and a crude little map of Fort Bragg drawn on its back. That was it. There was nothing else. Luce couldn't figure it out. No mention of their argument on the beach, no indication that Daniel even understood how erratic it was to practically vanish into thin air one night, then expect her to travel at his whim the next. No apology at all. Strange. Daniel could turn up anywhere, anytime. He was usually oblivious to the logistical realities that normal human beings had to deal with. The letter felt cold and stiff in her hands. Her more reckless side was tempted to pretend she'd never received it. She was tired of arguing, tired of Daniel's not trusting her with details. But that pesky, in-love side of Luce wondered whether she was being too harsh on him. Because their relationship was worth the effort. She tried to remember the way his eyes had looked and his voice had sounded when he told her the story about the lifetime she'd spent in the California gold rush. The way he'd seen her through the window and fallen in love with her for something like the 1,000th time. That was the image she took with her when she left her dorm room minutes later to creep along the path toward Shoreline's front gates, toward the bus stop where Daniel had instructed her to wait. An image of his pleading violet eyes tugged at her heart while she stood under a damp gray sky. She watched colorless cars materialize in the fog, peel around the hairpin turns on guardrailless Highway 1, and vanish again. When she looked back at Shoreline's formidable campus in the distance, she remembered Jasmine's words at the party. "As long as we stay under their umbrella of surveillance, we can pretty much do as we please." Luce was stepping out from under the umbrella, but where was the harm? She wasn't really a student there, and anyway, seeing Daniel again was worth the risk of getting caught. A few minutes past the half hour, the number 5 bus pulled up to the stop. The bus was old and gray and rickety, as was the driver, who heaved the lever door open to let Luce board. She took an empty seat near the front. The bus smelled like cobwebs or a rarely used attic. She had to clutch the cheap leatherette seat cushion as the bus barreled around the curves at 50 miles an hour, as if just inches beyond the road, the cliff didn't drop a mile straight down into the jagged gray ocean. It was raining by the time they got to town, a steady, sideways drizzle, just shy of a real downpour. Most of the businesses on the main street were already closed up for the night, and the town looked wet and a little desolate. not exactly the scene she'd had in mind for a happy makeup conversation. Climbing down from the bus, Luce pulled the ski cap out of her backpack and tugged it over her head. She could feel the chill of the rain on her nose and her fingertips. She spotted a bent green metal sign and followed its arrow toward Noyo Point. The point was a wide peninsula of land, not lush green like the terrain on Shoreline's campus, but a mix of patchy grass and scabs of wet gray sand. The trees thinned out here, their leaves stripped away by the fitful ocean wind. There was one lone bench on a patch of mud all the way at the edge, about 100 yards from the road. That must have been where Daniel meant for them to meet. But Luce could see from where she stood that he wasn't there yet. She looked down at her watch. She was 5 minutes late. Daniel was never late. The rain seemed to settle on the tips of her hair instead of soaking into it the way rain usually did. Not even Mother Nature knew what to do with a dyed blonde Luce. She didn't feel like waiting for Daniel out in the open. There was a row of shops on the main street. Luce hung back there, standing on a long wooden porch under a rusty metal awning. Fred's Fish, the closed shop sign, read in faded blue letters. Fort Bragg wasn't quaint like Mendocino, the town where she and Daniel had stopped before he'd flown her up the shoreline. It was more industrial, a real old-fashioned fishing village with rotting docks fitted into a curved inlet where the land tapered down toward the water. While Luce waited, a boat full of fishermen were stepping ashore. She watched the line of rail-thin, hardened men in their soaking wet slickers come up the rocky stairs from the docks below. When they reached the street level, they walked alone or in silent clusters, past the empty bench and the sad, slanted trees, past the shut-up storefronts to a gravel parking lot at the south edge of Noyo Point. They climbed into beat-up old trucks, turned over the engines, and drove away, the sea of grim-set faces thinning until one stood out. And he wasn't coming off any schooner. In fact, he seemed to have appeared suddenly out of the fog. Luce jumped back against the metal shutter of the fish store and tried to catch her breath. Cam. He was walking west along the gravel road, right in front of her, flanked by two dark-clad fishermen who didn't seem to notice his presence. He was dressed in slim black jeans and a black leather jacket. His dark hair was shorter than when she'd last seen him, shining in the rain. A hint of the black sunburst tattoo was visible on the side of his neck. Against the colorless backdrop of the sky, his eyes were as intensely green as they'd ever been. The last time she'd seen him, Cam had been standing at the front of a sickening black army of demons, so callous and cruel and just plain evil. It had made her blood run cold. She had a string of curses and accusations ready to fling at him, but it would be better still if she could just avoid him altogether. Too late. Cam's green gaze fell on her, and she froze. Not because he turned on any of the fake charm that she'd come too close to falling for at Sword and Cross, but because he looked genuinely alarmed to see her. He swerved, moving against the flow of the few final straggling fishermen, and was at her side in an instant.
"What are you doing here?"
Cam looked more than alarmed, Luce decided. He looked almost afraid. His shoulders were bunched up around his neck, and his eyes wouldn't settle on anything for longer than a second. He hadn't said a thing about her hair. It almost seemed as if he hadn't noticed it. Luce was certain Cam was not supposed to know that she was out here in California. Keeping her away from guys like him was the whole point of her relocation. Now she'd blown that. She eyed the white gravel path behind Cam, cutting through the grass bordering the cliff's edge. "I'm just going for a walk."
"You are not."
"Leave me alone," she tried to push past him. "I have nothing to say to you."
"Which would be fine, since we're not supposed to be talking to one another. But you're not supposed to leave that school."
Suddenly, she felt nervous, like he knew something she didn't. "How did you know I'm even going to school here?" Cam sighed.
"I know everything, okay?"
"Then you're here to fight Daniel?" Cam's green eyes narrowed.
"Why would I... Wait, are you saying you're here to see him?"
"Don't sound so shocked. We are together." It was like Cam still hadn't gotten over that she'd picked Daniel instead of him. Cam scratched his forehead, looking concerned. When he finally spoke, his words were rushed.
"Did he send for you, Luce?"
She winced, buckling under the pressure of his gaze. "I got a letter."
"Let me see it."
Now Luce stiffened, examining Cam's peculiar expression to try to understand what he knew. He looked about as uneasy as she felt. She didn't budge.
You were tricked. Grigori wouldn't send for you right now.
You don't know what he would do for me. Luce turned away, wishing Cam had never seen her, wishing herself far away. She felt a childish need to brag to Cam that Daniel had visited her last night. But the bragging would end there. There wasn't much glory in relaying the details of their argument.
I know he would die if you died, Luce. If you want to live another day, you'd better show me the letter.
You would kill me over a piece of paper?
I wouldn't, but whoever sent you that note probably intends to.
What? Feeling it almost burning in her pocket, Luce resisted the urge to thrust the letter into his hands. Cam didn't know what he was talking about. He couldn't. But the longer he stared at her, the more she began to wonder about the strange letter she was holding. That bus ticket, the directions, it had been weirdly technical and formulaic, not like Daniel at all. She fished it out of her pocket, fingers trembling. Cam snatched it from her, grimacing as he read. He muttered something under his breath as his eyes darted around the forest on the other side of the road. Luce looked around, too, but she could see nothing suspicious about the few remaining fishermen loading their gear into rusty truck beds.
Come on, he said finally, grabbing her by the elbow. It's past time to get you back to school.
She jerked away. I'm not going anywhere with you. I hate you. What are you even doing here? He stepped around her in a circle.
I'm hunting.
She sized him up, trying not to let on that he still made her nervous. Slim, punk rock dressed, gunless Cam.
Really?
She cocked her head. Hunting what? Cam stared past her toward the dusk-swept forest. He nodded once.
Her.
Luce craned her neck to see who or what Cam was talking about, but before she could see anything, he pushed her sharply. There was a weird huff of air, and something silver zipped past her face.
Get down!
Cam yelled, pressing hard on Luce's shoulders. She sank to the porch floor, feeling his weight on top of her, smelling the dust on the wood planks.
Get off me! She shouted.
As she writhed in disgust, cold fear pressed into her. Whoever was out there must be really bad. Otherwise, she'd never be in a situation where Cam was the one protecting her. A moment later, Cam was sprinting across the empty parking lot. He was racing toward a girl. A very pretty girl, about Luce's age, dressed in a long brown cloak. She had delicate features and white blonde hair pulled high into a ponytail. But something was strange about her eyes. They held a vacant expression that, even from this distance, struck Luce rigid with fear. There was more. The girl was armed. She held a silver bow and was hurriedly knocking an arrow. Cam barreled forward, his feet crunching on the gravel lot as he moved straight toward the girl, whose bizarre silver bow gleamed even in the fog, like it was not of this earth. Resting her eyes away from the lunatic girl with the arrow, Luce rolled to her knees and scanned the parking lot to see whether anyone else looked as panicked as she felt. But the place was empty, eerily quiet. Her lungs felt tight. She could hardly breathe. The girl moved almost like a machine, with no hesitation. And Cam was unarmed. The girl was pulling back on the bowstring, and Cam was in point-blank range. But it took her a split second too long. Cam plowed into her, knocking her onto her back. He brutally wrestled the bow out of her hands, snapping his elbow against her face until she let go. The girl yelped, a high, innocent sound, and recoiled on the ground as Cam turned the bow on her. She raised her open hand in supplication. Then Cam loosed the arrow straight into her heart. Across the parking lot, Luce cried out and bit down on her fist. Though she wanted to be far, far away, she found herself lumbering to her feet and jogging closer. Something was wrong. Luce expected to find the girl lying there, bleeding, but this girl did not struggle, did not cry, because she was no longer there at all. She and the arrow that Cam had shot into her had vanished. Cam scoured the parking lot, snatching up the arrows the archer had spilled, as if it was the most urgent task he'd ever performed. Luce crouched down where the girl had fallen. She traced the rough gravel with her finger, baffled and more terrified than she'd been a moment before. There was no sign that anyone had ever been there. Cam returned to Luce's side with three arrows in one hand and the silver bow in the other. Instinctively, Luce reached out to touch one. She'd never seen anything like it. For some reason, it sent a strange ripple of fascination through her. Goosebumps rose on her skin. Her head swam. Cam jerked the arrows away.
Don't. They're deadly.
They didn't look deadly. In fact, the arrows didn't even have heads. They were just silver sticks that dead-ended in a flat tip. And yet, one had made that girl disappear. Luce blinked a few times.
What just happened, Cam?
Her voice felt heavy.
Who was she?
She was an outcast.
Cam wasn't looking at her. He was fixated on the silver bow in his hands.
A what?
The worst kind of angel. They sided with Satan during the revolt, but wouldn't actually set foot in the underworld.
Why not?
You know the type. Like those girls who want to be invited to the party but don't actually plan to show up.
He grimaced.
As soon as the battle ended, they tried to backpedal up to heaven pretty fast, but it was already too late. You only get one shot at those clouds.
He glanced at Luce.
Most of us do, anyway.
So, if they're not with heaven...
She was still getting used to talking concretely about these things.
Are they with hell?
Hardly, though I remember when they came crawling back.
Cam gave a sinister laugh.
Usually we'll take just about anyone we can get, but even Satan has his limits. He cast them out permanently, struck them blind to add injury to insult.
But that girl wasn't blind,
Luce whispered, recalling the way her bow had followed Cam's every move. The only reason she hadn't hit him was because he'd moved so fast, and yet Luce had known there was something off about that girl.
She was. She just uses other senses to feel her way through the world. She can see after a fashion. It has its limitations and its benefits.
His eyes never stopped combing the tree line. Luce clammed up at the thought of more outcasts nested in the forest, more of those silver bows and arrows.
Well, what happened to her? Where is she now?
Cam stared at her.
She's dead, Luce. Poof. Gone.
Dead?
Luce looked at the place on the ground where it had happened, now just as empty as the rest of the lot. She dropped her head, feeling dizzy.
I thought you couldn't kill angels.
Only for lack of a good weapon.
He flashed the arrows at Luce one last time, before wrapping them up in a cloth he pulled from his pocket and tucking them inside his leather jacket.
These things are hard to come by. Oh, stop trembling. I'm not going to kill you.
He turned away and started testing the doors of the cars in the lot, smirking when he spotted the rolled-down driver's side window of a gray and yellow truck. He reached inside and flipped the lock.
Be thankful you don't have to walk back to school. Come on, get in.
When Cam popped open the passenger side door, Luce's jaw dropped. She peered in through the open window and watched him jimmying the ignition.
You think I'm just going to get in some hot-wired car with you, right after I watched you murder someone?
If I hadn't killed her...
He fumbled around beneath the steering wheel.
She would have killed you, okay? Who do you think sent you that note? You were lured out of school to be murdered. Does that make it go down any easier?
Luce leaned against the hood of the truck, not knowing what to do. She thought back to the conversation she'd had with Daniel, Arian, and Gabby right before she left Sword and Cross. They'd said Miss Sophia and the others in her sect might come after her.
But she didn't look like... Are the outcasts part of the elders?
By then, Cam had the engine running. He quickly hopped out, walked around, and hustled Luce into the passenger seat.
Move along. Chop, chop. This is like herding a cat.
Finally, he had her sitting and pulled her seatbelt around her.
Unfortunately, Luce, you've got more than one kind of enemy, which is why I'm taking you back to school where it's safe. Right now.
She didn't think it would be smart to be alone in a car with Cam, but she wasn't sure staying here on her own was any smarter.
Wait a minute, she said as he turned back toward Shoreline. If these outcasts aren't part of heaven or hell, whose side are they on?
The outcasts are a sickening shade of gray. In case you hadn't noticed, there are worse things out there than me.
Luce folded her hands on her lap, anxious to get back to her dorm room, where she could feel, or at least pretend to feel, safe. Why should she believe Cam? She'd fallen for his lies too many times before.
There's nothing worse than you. What you want, what you tried to do at Sword and Cross was horrible and wrong.
She shook her head. You're just trying to trick me again.
I'm not.
His voice had less argument in it than she would have expected. He seemed thoughtful, even glum. By then, he'd pulled into Shoreline's long arched driveway.
I never wanted to hurt you, Luce. Never.
Is that why you called all those shadows to battle when I was in the cemetery?
Good and evil aren't as clear-cut as you think.
He looked out the window toward the Shoreline buildings, which appeared dark and uninhabited.
You're from the south, right? This time around, anyway. So you should understand the freedom that the victors have to rewrite history. Semantics, Luce. What you think of as evil, well, to my kind, it's a simple problem of connotation.
Daniel doesn't think so. Luce wished she could have said she didn't think so, but she didn't know enough yet. She still felt like she was taking so much of Daniel's explanations on faith. Cam parked the truck on a patch of grass behind her dorm, got out, and walked around to open the passenger door.
Daniel and I are two sides of the same coin.
He offered his hand to help her down. She ignored him.
It must pain you to hear that.
She wanted to say it couldn't possibly be true, that there were no similarities between Cam and Daniel, no matter how Cam tried to whitewash things. But in the week she'd been at Shoreline, Luce had seen and heard things that conflicted with what she'd once believed. She thought of Francesca and Stephen. They were born of the same place. Once upon a time, before the war and the fall, there had only been one side. Cam wasn't the only one who claimed that the divide between angels and demons wasn't entirely black and white. The light was on in her window. Luce imagined Shelby on the orange area rug, her legs crossed in the lotus position, meditating. How could Luce go in and pretend she hadn't just seen an angel die, or that everything that had happened this week hadn't left her riddled with doubts?
Let's keep this evening's happenings between us, shall we? Cam said. And going forward, do us all a favor and stay on campus, where you won't get into trouble.
She pushed past him, out of the beam of the stolen truck's headlights, and into the shadows cloaking the walls of her dorm. Cam got back into the truck, revving the engine obnoxiously. But before he pulled away, he rolled down the window and called out to Luce.
You're welcome.
She turned around.
For what?
He grinned and hit the gas.
For saving your life.
6. 13 days.
It's here,
a loud voice sang outside Luce's door early the next morning. Someone was knocking.
It's finally here.
The knocking grew more insistent. Luce didn't know what time it was, other than way too early for all the giggling she could hear on the other side of the door.
Your friends, Shelby called from the top bunk.
Luce groaned and slid out of bed. She glanced up at Shelby, who was propped up on her stomach on the top bunk, already fully dressed in jeans and a puffy red vest, doing the Saturday crossword.
Do you ever sleep? Luce muttered, reaching into her closet to yank on the purple tartan robe her mother had sewn for her 13th birthday.
It still fit her. Sort of. She pressed her face against the peephole and saw the convex smiling faces of Dawn and Jasmine. They were geared up with bright scarves and fuzzy earmuffs. Jasmine raised a cup holder with four coffees as Dawn, who had a large brown paper bag in her hand, knocked again.
Are you going to shoo them away, or should I call campus security? Shelby asked.
Ignoring her, Luce swung open the door, and the two girls flooded past her into the room, talking a mile a minute.
Finally, Jasmine laughed, handing Luce a cup of coffee before plopping down in the unmade bottom bunk. We have so much to discuss.
Neither Dawn nor Jasmine had ever come over before, but Luce was enjoying the way they acted right at home. It reminded her of Penn, who'd borrowed the spare key to Luce's room so she could barrel in whenever the need arose. Luce looked down at her coffee and swallowed hard. No way could she get emotional here, now, in front of these three. Dawn was in the bathroom, rooting through the cupboards next to the sink.
As an integral member of the planning committee, we think you should be a part of the welcome address today, she said, looking up at Luce in disbelief. How are you not even dressed yet? The yacht leaves in, like, under an hour.
Luce scratched her forehead.
Remind me?
Dawn groaned dramatically.
Amy Branshaw, my lab partner, the one whose father owns the monster yacht? Is any of this ringing a bell?
It was all coming back to her. Saturday, the yacht trip up the coast. Jasmine and Don had pitched the distantly educational idea to Shoreline's events committee, a.k.a. Francesca, and had somehow gotten it approved. Luce had agreed to help, but she hadn't done a thing. All she could think about now was Daniel's face when she told him about it, instantly dismissing the idea of Luce's having fun without him. Now Don was rifling through Luce's closet. She pulled out a long-sleeved, eggplant-colored jersey dress, tossed it at Luce, and shooed her into the bathroom.
"Don't forget leggings underneath. It's cold out on the water."
On her way, Luce grabbed her cell phone from its charger. Last night, after Cam had dropped her off, she'd felt so terrified and alone, she'd broken Mr. Cole's number one rule and texted Callie. If Mr. Cole knew how badly she needed to hear from a friend, he'd probably still be furious with her. Too late now. She opened her text message folder and recalled how her fingers had been shaking when she wrote the lie-filled text. "Finally scored a cell phone. Reception's spotty, but I'll call when I can. Everything's great here, but I miss you. Write soon." No response from Callie. Was she sick? Busy? Out of town? Ignoring Luce for ignoring her? Luce glanced in the mirror. She looked and felt like crap. But she'd agreed to help Dawn and Jasmine, so she tugged on the jersey dress and twisted her blonde hair back with a few bobby pins. By the time Luce came out of the bathroom, Shelby was helping herself to the breakfast the girls had brought with them in the paper bag. It did look really good. Cherry danishes and apple fritters and muffins and cinnamon rolls and three different kinds of juice. Jasmine handed her an oversized bran muffin and a tub of cream cheese. Brain food.
"What's all this?"
Miles stuck his head in through the slightly ajar door. Luce couldn't see his eyes under his tugged-down baseball cap, but his brown hair was flipping up on the sides, and his giant dimples showed when he smiled. Don went into an instant fit of giggles, for no other reason than that Miles was cute and Don was Don. But Miles didn't seem to notice. He was almost more relaxed and casual around a group of very girly girls than Luce was herself. Maybe he had a whole bunch of sisters or something. He wasn't like some of the other kids at Shoreline, whose coolness seemed to be a front. Miles was genuine, the real thing.
"Don't you have any friends your own gender?" Shelby asked, pretending to be more annoyed than she really was.
Now that she knew her roommate a little better, Luce was starting to find Shelby's abrasive humor almost charming.
"Course."
Miles stepped into the room totally unfazed.
"It's just my guy friends don't usually show up with breakfast."
He slid a huge cinnamon roll out of the bag and took a giant bite.
"You look pretty, Luce," he said with his mouth full.
Luce blushed, and Dawn stopped giggling, and Shelby coughed into her sleeve.
"Awkward."
At the first sound of the loudspeaker in the hallway, Luce jumped. The other kids looked at her like she was nuts, but Luce was still used to Sword and Cross's punishing PA pronouncements. Instead, Francesca's amber voice poured into the room.
"Good morning, Shoreline. If you're joining us on today's yachting trip, the bus to the marina leaves in 10 minutes. Let's convene at the south entrance for a headcount, and don't forget to dress warmly."
Miles grabbed another pastry for the road. Shelby pulled on a pair of polka-dot galoshes. Jasmine tightened the band of her pink earmuffs and shrugged it loose.
"So much for planning. We'll have to wing the welcome address."
"Sit by us on the bus," Dawn instructed. "We'll totally map it out on the way to Noyo Point."
Noyo Point. Luce had to force herself to swallow a mouthful of bran muffin. The outcast girl's dead expression, even when she was alive. The awful ride home with Cam. The memory brought goosebumps to Luce's skin. It didn't help that Cam had rubbed it in about saving her life, right after he told her not to leave campus again. Such a weird thing to say, almost like he and Daniel were in cahoots. Stalling, Luce sat on the edge of her bed.
"So we're all going?"
She'd never broken a promise to Daniel before. Even though she'd never really promised not to go on the yacht. The restriction felt so harsh and out of line, her instinct was to blow it off. But if she agreed to play by Daniel's rules, maybe she wouldn't have to face someone else's getting killed. Though that was probably just her paranoia rearing up again. That note had deliberately lured her off campus. A school yacht trip was something else entirely. It wasn't as though the outcasts were piloting the boat.
"Of course we're all going."
Miles grabbed Luce's hand, pulling her to her feet and toward the door.
"Why wouldn't we?"
This was the moment of choice, Luce could stay safely on campus the way Daniel and Cam had told her, like a prisoner, or she could walk out this door and prove to herself that her life was her own. Half an hour later, Luce was staring, along with half of Shoreline's student body, at a shining white 130-foot Austal luxury yacht. The air up at Shoreline had been clearer, but down on the water, at the marina adjacent to the docks, there was still a thin felt of fog left over from the day before. When Francesca descended from the bus, she muttered, "Enough is enough," and raised her palms in the air. Very casually, as if she were pushing aside curtains from a window, she literally parted the fog with her fingers, opening up a rich plane of clear sky directly over the gleaming boat. It was done so subtly, none of the non-Nephilim students or teachers could tell that anything other than nature was at work. But Luce gaped, not sure she had just seen what she thought she had seen, until Dawn started clapping very quietly.
"Stunning, as usual," Francesca smiled slightly.
"Yes, that's better, isn't it?" Luce was beginning to notice all the small touches that could have been the work of an angel. The chartered coach ride had been so much smoother than the public bus she'd taken in the rain the day before. The storefront seemed refreshed, as if the whole town had gotten a new coat of paint. The students lined up to board the yacht, which was dazzling in the way very expensive things were. Its sleek profile curved like a seashell, and each of its three levels had its own broad white deck. From where they entered on the foredeck, Luce could see through the enormous windows into three plushly furnished cabins. In the warm, still sunshine down at the marina, Luce's worries about Cam and the outcasts seemed ridiculous. She was surprised to feel them melt away. She followed Miles into the cabin on the second level of the yacht. The walls were a sedate taupe, with long black and white banquettes hugging the curved walls. A half-dozen students had already thrown themselves down on the upholstered benches and were picking at the huge array of food that covered the coffee tables. At the bar, Miles popped open a can of Coke, split it between two plastic glasses, and handed one to Luce.
"So the demon says to the angel, 'Sue me? Where do you think you're going to have to go to find a lawyer?'"
He nudged her.
"Get it? 'Cause lawyers are supposed to all..."
A punchline. Her mind had been elsewhere, and she'd missed the fact that Miles had even been telling a joke. She forced herself to crack up, laughing loudly, even slapping the top of the bar. Miles looked relieved, if not a little suspicious of her overblown reaction.
"Wow," Luce said, feeling crummy as she scaled back her fake laughter.
"That was a good one."
To their left, Lilith, the tall, red-headed triplet Luce had met on the first day of school, stopped the bite of tuna tartare on its way into her mouth.
"What kind of lame half-breed joke is that?"
She was scowling, mostly at Luce, her glossy lips set in a snarl.
"You actually think that's funny? Have you ever even been to the underworld? It's no laughing matter. We expect that from Miles, but I would have thought you had better taste."
Luce was taken aback.
"I didn't realize it was a question of taste," she said.
"In that case, I'm definitely sticking with Miles."
"Shh."
Francesca's manicured hands were suddenly on both Luce's and Lilith's shoulders. "Whatever this is about, remember, you're on a ship with 73 non-Nephilim students. The word of the day is discretion." That was still one of the weirdest parts about Shoreline, as far as Luce was concerned. All the time they spent with the regular kids at the school, pretending they weren't doing whatever it was they were actually doing inside the Nephilim Lodge. Luce still wanted to talk to Francesca about the announcers, to bring up what she had done earlier that week in the woods. Francesca glided away, and Shelby shoved up next to Luce and Miles.
"Exactly how discreet do you think I need to be while giving 73 non-Nephilim swirlies in the cabin toilets?"
"You're bad."
Luce laughed, then did a double take when Shelby held out her plate of antipasti.
"Look who's sharing," Luce said. "And you call yourself an only child."
Shelby jerked the plate back after Luce had helped herself to one olive.
"Yeah, well, don't get used to it or anything."
When the engine revved beneath their feet, the whole boatful of students cheered. Luce preferred moments like this at Shoreline, when she really couldn't tell who was Nephilim and who wasn't. A line of girls braved the cold outside, laughing as their hair tumbled in the wind. Some of the guys from her history class were getting a game of poker together in one corner of the main cabin. That table was where Luce would have expected to find Roland, but he was conspicuously absent. Near the bar, Jasmine was taking pictures of the whole scene, while Don motioned to Luce, miming with a pen and paper in the air, that they still had to write out their speech. Luce was heading over to join them when, out of the corner of her eye, she spotted Stephen through the windows. He was by himself, leaning against the railing in a long black trench coat, a fedora capping his salt-and-pepper hair. It still made her nervous to think of him as a demon, especially because she genuinely liked him, or at least what she knew of him. His relationship with Francesca confused her even more. They were such a unit. It reminded her of what Cam had said the night before, about him and Daniel not being all that different. The comparison was still nagging at her as she slid open the tinted glass door and stepped out on the deck. All she could see on the westward side of the yacht was the endless blue on blue of ocean and clear sky. The water was calm, but a brisk wind tore around the sides of the boat. Luce had to hold on to the railing, squinting in the bright sunlight, shielding her eyes with her hand as she approached Stephen. She didn't see Francesca anywhere.
"Hello, Luce."
He smiled at her and took off his hat when she reached the railing. His face was tan for November.
"How is everything?"
"That's a big question," she said.
"Have you felt overwhelmed this week? Our demonstration with the announcer didn't upset you too much." "You know,"
he lowered his voice,
"we've never taught that before."
"Upset me? No, I loved it," Lou said quickly. "I mean, it was difficult to watch, but also fascinating. I've been wanting to talk about it with someone." With Stephen's eyes on her, she remembered the conversation she'd overheard her two teachers having with Roland. How it had been Stephen, not Francesca, who'd been more open to including announcers in the curriculum. "I want to learn all about them."
"All about them?"
Stephen tilted his head, catching the full sun on his already golden skin.
"That could take a while. There are trillions of announcers, one for almost every moment in history. The field is endless. Most of us don't even know where to begin."
"Is that why you haven't taught them before?"
"It's controversial," Stephen said. "There are angels who don't believe the announcers have any value, or that the bad things they often herald outweigh the good. They call advocates like me historical pack rats, too obsessed with the past to pay attention to the sins of the present."
"But that's like saying the past doesn't have any value." If that were true, it would mean that all of Luce's former lives didn't add up to anything, that her history with Daniel was also worthless. So all she'd have to go on was what she knew of Daniel in this lifetime. And was that really enough? No, it wasn't. She had to believe there was more to what she felt for Daniel, a valuable, locked-away history that added up to something bigger than a few nights of blissful kissing and a few more nights of arguing. Because if the past had no value, that was really all they had.
"Judging from the look on your face," Stephen said, "it seems like I've got another one on my side."
"I hope you're not filling Luce's head with any of your devilish filth." Francesca appeared behind them. Her hands were on her hips and a scowl was on her face. Until she started laughing, Luce had no idea she was teasing. "We were talking about the shadows, I mean the announcers," Luce said. "Stephen just told me he thinks there are trillions of them." "Stephen also thinks he doesn't need to call a plumber when the toilet overflows." Francesca smiled warmly, but there was an undercurrent in her voice that made Luce feel embarrassed, like she'd spoken too boldly. "You want to bear witness to more gruesome scenes like the one we examined in class the other day?" "No, that's not what I meant." "There's a reason why certain things are best left in the hands of experts." Francesca looked at Stephen. "I'm afraid that, like a broken toilet, the announcers as a window on the past are just one of those things."
"Of course we understand why you in particular might be interested in them," Stephen said, drawing Luce's full attention.
So Stephen got it, her past lives. "But you must understand," Francesca added, "that glimpsing shadows is highly risky without the proper training. If you are interested, there are universities, rigorous academic programs even, that I would be happy to talk to you about down the road. But for now, Luce, you must forgive our mistake for showing it prematurely to a high school class, and then you must leave it at that." Luce felt strange and exposed. Both of them were watching her. Leaning over the railing a little, she could see some of her friends on the ship's main deck below. Miles had a pair of binoculars pressed to his eyes and was trying to point something out to Shelby, who ignored him behind her giant Ray-Bans. At the stern, Dawn and Jasmine were seated on a ledge with Amy Branshaw. They were bent over a manila folder, making hurried notes.
"I should go help out with the welcome address," Luce said, backing away from Francesca and Stephen.
She could feel their eyes on her all the way down the winding staircase.
Luce reached the main deck, ducked under a row of furled sails, and squeezed past a group of non-Nephilim students standing in a bored circle around Mr. Kramer, the beanpole-thin biology teacher, who was lecturing on something like the fragile ecosystem right below their feet.
There